All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, we've got a really good guest coming up here shortly.
We do. I mean, if his bio is true anyway, we've got a good guest.
If you love copywriting, writing sales copy, or just marketing in general, this should be really good.
So because he has his own company, obviously, which he markets, and he does client work, which he, you know, does a lot of copy for. So we won't give too much away, but he'll be joining us here in just a minute after we do our beverages. So
we'll just give a little teaser since the tease I would give is he's grossed over $700 million in sales from his copy alone.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad.
That's not bad. Hope he got royalties on those.
All right. But before we get into that segment, we've got some important business to take care of, which is our brew this week, and which leads me to mention our sponsor, the Original Craft Beer Club.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Let me pull up my spiel. My spiel,
as you say. Spiel. Yes.
The Original Craft Beer Club, outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the U.S. One of the best ways to sample these unique beers is by letting the Original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and tasting to bring you the best beer discoveries in the country. And you can learn more about their monthly service by visiting them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. And you can select either monthly, bi-monthly, you know, whatever you want. These are, as I mentioned previously, these are great gifts. I give these gifts out during the holidays. These make fantastic gifts for any beer lover. And the great thing about it is you can send the gift cards by email. If you forget the last minute, you're like, ah, crap. Yep. Forgot to send that gift card out.
Yes.
Guess what?
The old gift card savior.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder how many sales Amazon does on Christmas, like Eve day for gift cards, because, or even Christmas day, like you're, oh crap, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Forgot to send that card out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, probably a lot.
Oh, I'm sure quite a few. Probably much more than the returns they get after Christmas.
Indeed.
Or maybe indeed. Not.
I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? Hey, somebody, we got a comment that just says Sean McCool over in the Facebook. I can't tell who the user is because they have not authorized StreamYard to use that. So so it just says Facebook user.
Apparently,
so
it's one of your name.
It's one of a billion or so people.
That's right.
So
that's right.
That follow us.
Thank you for listening in. And
thank you for listening in. So, so I went through my full month supply of the Original Craft Beer Club beer. So I went down to the old store last night and pulled something off the old shelf at HEB. And I'm pretty excited about it. It's that we were talking before the show. It's that time of year where tis the season for many dark beers.
Lots of choices.
It's the most wonderful time of year for the Persuasion by the Pint podcaster guys.
Absolutely.
So I've got... Well, I say I'm excited. We'll find out, right? But so it's the Three Nations Brewing Company. Okay. So Three Nations Brewing. They're up in Dallas, Texas, or right outside of Dallas in Carrollton, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I've got a Devout Imperial Stout Cream Brulee Edition.
Cream Brulee. Oh.
Yeah. So creme brulee, I guess. Creme brulee. So it says this brew is filled with notes of toffee, chocolate, caramel, vanilla, and roasted coffee. A beer devoted to our calling, divine taste, true to tradition.
Mm.
So I'm and it's 8.3% ABV, 25 IBUs. Mm-hmm. And it is from a can. They also have it on tap if you're ever up in Carrollton, Texas. And the building looks really cool. ThreeNationsBrewing.com. Next time you're in Dallas, you should stop by.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. You know, the creme brulee, so I took my wife out last night to a really nice dinner, a place called the Foothills Milling Company. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay.
I've been there. That was a long time ago, but yeah, it's still around. That's a good sign.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. So we had for dessert, we went out last night for her birthday and had the creme brulee.
Nice.
For dessert. It was really good, but not as good as the main course. Whew. She had a lobster. Ooh, look at that.
Yeah. Look at that.
I didn't watch you pour there. I'm trying to see if your pouring skills have.
I got a little better. I mean, I have to. It is an awkward pour over your desk, you know? It's like.
Yeah, you're kind of reaching over the boom.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird pour. But all right, I'll let you pour before I taste. But
all right.
What do you got on your end?
So from Boulevard, Boulevard Brewing Company. I don't know if we've had a Boulevard.
I don't know. That sounds fresh and new. I like it.
So this is a Boulevard Plaid Habit. Plaid. Notice the
Plaid Habit. I get it. Yeah. Play on words there.
This is a limited release. It is a Canadian whiskey barrel aged Imperial. This is not an Imperial Stout. It's an Imperial Brown Ale.
Mm.
A limited release Canadian whiskey bourbon barrel aged. I'm sorry. Canadian whiskey barrel aged Imperial Brown Ale. So.
Yeah. Cool. So you got the little bit of the barrel aging going on.
That's right.
Got some Imperial throw in there, and then it's
an
ale. So yeah, no telling what this is going to be. Sounds pretty good though.
I like the color for an ale too. It's a darker.
Yeah. It said brown ale, right?
Oh, that's true. But that's nice. Even for a brown ale, that seems
dark. That's pretty dark.
Seems pretty dark.
Must be the imperialness of it. I don't know. I don't know. What is the imperial thing? Like, what does that signify? Any idea without Googling?
To me, it signifies a lot of high ABV because this one's got 12.5%, 13 IBUs.
It's pretty strong.
And it says, born a double mashed Imperial Brown Ale, then matured for 18 months in freshly drained 10-year Canadian rye whiskey barrels. Speaking of rye whiskey, I got something for our next episode.
Very nice. Good.
Canadian rye whiskey barrels. The beer features checkered notes of rich vanilla, charred oak, warming whiskey, and spicy rum. A lingering boozy sweetness. Who wrote this?
That's the 12% right there. That's the right. Lingering boozy.
So Plaid Habit. That is the name. Never heard of it.
Sounds delicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds so. Let's raise a glass and find out.
Absolutely. Ooh, man.
Oh wow. That is wow. That was not what I was expecting. Good way. Like it's just.
Is it a dessert flavor?
It's like a.
It's really sweet.
I don't know how to describe it.
Is it really sweet?
It's not super sweet. Mm-hmm. It's just got like this series of flavors that hits. Like you lift it up to your nose and you smell the coffee and a little bit of the vanilla and caramel. Mm-hmm. And then as you get like six different flavors from that sip.
Right.
And it's just like it's just all these flavors get rolled out and it's like, that was good, but that's good too. Like, just, I don't know what's happening to my taste buds. But yeah, it's really good. It's definitely got the creme brulee.
Mm-hmm. With a little bit of chocolate. You taste a little coffee.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, man, you can taste all the stuff that it talked about. You can taste all of it. The toffee, the chocolate, the vanilla, the caramel, roasted coffee, like you can taste all of it, but not in like an overpowering way. It is sweet.
Mm-hmm. But not too sweet.
All
right.
So you probably wouldn't drink the whole 4-pack, you know, because this is one of those 4-pack beers because it's so I'm going to give this a, kind of like it. I think it's, for this time of year, winter, it's cold out today. Yeah, I like it. I'm going to give it a 4, solid 4 out of 5.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah,
solid 4. So I'm going to answer. Let's see. I'm going to answer. Here's what I pulled up.
Resist, right?
Imperial is the strongest in alcohol and body of stouts.
You were right.
So,
but I've seen Imperial Porters and now that Imperial Brown Ale. So I guess it's just, I wonder if it's the double mash that makes it the Imperial. So basically they're double brewing to get more fermentation.
Yeah. This is good. Little too sweet for my liking. I kind of expected that, you know, being an Imperial brown ale, but
yeah, especially when you get up in the 12% range, you can get pretty sweet.
I still like it. I'll probably give it it's not something I would have on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Maybe with a cigar or something. So I would say, I'm going to go 3.8 on this one.
Still pretty good.
Yeah. Still good. Still one that I would, like I said, something to balance. I think you have to balance this one out with a little something because it's pretty sweet. So.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Maybe something salty or something strong like a cigar or something like that.
Exactly. Good stuff.
All right.
All right. Well, our guest is in the green room.
Ooh, fancy. Just I love being able to say we have a green room. That just, you know, sounds really impressive.
I love it.
Very impressive. Very impressive. So I'll you get the applause. Yes. Don't tell him there's going to be applause though.
He may have already heard that. And we'd like to welcome, is it Stefan?
Stefan.
Stefan. Okay. All right. You know, people pronounced that differently. So I don't know if it's, from a Southern background, I want to say Stefan, but it's
kind of like we've had the pecan pecan.
That's true.
Conversation.
Right? Depends on what part of the country you're in.
Yeah. So it changes. So I'm going to do just a little brief bio here. Very brief, just from your website, Stefan, to introduce you to the people. And then we'll jump into basically talking about whatever we want to talk about.
Cool.
So Stefan is a direct response copywriter whose words have grossed over 700 million. He's the inventor of the RMBC method, which is a systematic approach to writing better sales copy more consistently in less time. It's what we all want. He's a co-founder of Copy Accelerator, a high-end copywriting mastermind whose 170 members generate, get this, over $1.5 billion in annual sales. And that's just the start. We're going to find out the rest right now.
Stefan, thanks for joining us today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh. Absolutely. We'll give you some applause.
I heard you say the applause was coming, and then I still kind of forgot about it. So
it still worked.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Stefan, we teased at the beginning of the show, this is before you came on, but we teased this to our listeners where we said, since starting copywriting in 2011, you have grossed over $700 million in sales just from your words alone.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's pretty impressive. You got me beat. I'll say that.
mostly like luck though and getting the right clients, you know, that helps a lot.
It does help a lot, doesn't it? Like that's one of those not talked about secrets of copywriting is have great clients with great lists.
Yeah.
You know, it makes a huge, huge difference. But before we get into like any, like, you know, how to get better at writing copy and all that kind of stuff, just like, let's go into how'd you find your way to copy? I mean, this is, you know, you and I are in some pretty similar circles. You know, Justin is here in Austin. I've met him. I know you and he hang out, Justin Goff, I think, hang out a little bit. Some of the other circles, like, we're in, you know, I know people that are in your group, things like that, Jay Kaufberg, you know, different people. So very interesting how small this world is and how you find your way to it is pretty interesting. How did you find your way to this world of copywriting, online direct response marketing?
Yeah. So it was definitely by complete happenstance. The fairly abbreviated version is that in 2011, I was at a outdoor school in Marble Falls, Texas. So if you're you know, Austin, you know where Marble Falls is probably.
Yes. I'm actually out in Lakeway, so it's actually like 10 minutes from here, probably 15 minutes.
Yeah. So there's a camp there called Camp Champions, and there's this guy named Steve Baskins who was like from the area and went there as like a kid. He went to the summer camp and then he went to like Harvard and got like an MBA and made some money on Wall Street. But then once he made a bit of money, he like left and went and bought his childhood summer camp so that he could own it. So he would run that as a summer camp in the summer. And then during the fall and the spring, in order to kind of monetize it, he did like an outdoor ed type of school program. So kids from all over Texas would come in and learn about like nature, and you had your instructors. And I'd previously been working in a call center environment for a for-profit college in San Diego and just hating every moment of it.
Really, you hated a call center?
Shocking twist. I did not like this. And high pressure, you know, 50 plus calls a day to try and convince people who had no business, you know, going back to school to take out massive amounts of debt to go to a for-profit online college that if they graduated, which they never did, the degree was going to be pretty much worthless. So, you know, I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where you're like, man, but I was also in my early 20s and it's like a job and they would pay me and I couldn't find a job anywhere else, but I hated it. I'd have such bad anxiety before going in that I would, you know, I'd wait until the last second in like in the parking lot and I'd go in and then I would actually chew tobacco the entire time I was there. I'd have like a dip in my mouth. And then the minute I left, I stopped chewing tobacco and I realized it was because it was just like a complete coping mechanism, you know, it was just like a way for me to cope with like this anxiety and all that. So anyway, I was like, I'm probably not good for my soul or my health to like be in this job. So went to like be an outdoor ed instructor, but then after like the first kind of semester there, my dad ended up getting sick with cancer. So I went back home to San Diego to be with him and he passed about 4 months after that. I went to Vegas about a month after he passed to kind of blow off steam. And while I was there, I went to play poker and a girl came into the poker room and I thought she was beautiful. I noticed her right away. I joked to the table. I was like, I hope she gets seated at our table. And everyone kind of laughed. And then she did, which is very lucky because there's like 20, 30 tables in there and you don't get to pick what table. If you've ever played poker at a casino, you go to like the floor and they seat you based on how many open seats there are. So she got seated. Somebody asked her what she did for a living. She said, I'm a writer. And then I wanted to talk to her because I thought she was attractive. So I said, what kind of writer? And she said, I'm a copywriter. And I had like an iPhone 1 or whatever it is. And I used whatever search thing they had to go, what's a copywriter? I searched it under the table on my phone because I had no idea what copywriting was, but I wanted to talk to her. And that was my first introduction into copywriting ever.
Wow. Wow. So are you married to that woman now?
I am. Thank you for helping me to close the loop because I do forget to do that sometimes. And she's not, she doesn't really like that. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome, man. I love that. That's a great story.
Yeah, it is. Very cool. Very cool. So, man, one thing you said, though, reminded me of like one of my early direct response jobs was selling diamond saw blades to contractors at 5 a.m. So, like, we had to cold call. And most contractors are work from home, right? Because that's where their office is. So we're literally like waking up their wife and they're like, hello. And it's like, is Mr. Smith there? It was awful. It was awful. Absolutely awful. So like 4 hours in the morning, we went by time zone, start on the East Coast, and you had to start like from 5 to 7 was all you had per time zone. Because by then they're out on the job site. And this was pre cell phone and all that kind of stuff. So back in the late '90s. So yeah, I feel you on the call center thing. That's just, that is no way to live. Tough way.
It was pretty brutal.
But you learn some stuff. Even though it's terrible, like you do learn some stuff if you kind of flash back to it. And like now I bet you could go just rock a call center floor, right? Because you know it's not about the pitch. It's about them on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, exactly. It is funny because, so two things. I own a call center today and it's in Vegas and we've got like 100 agents, but it's like mostly inbound customer support, people calling about their tickets. Yeah. And then there's an outbound side, but it's mostly just calling partials and people who like, you know, abandoned carts and they get like a really good commission and like the top people there are making like 6 figures and like actually like their job. So it's kind of cool in a full circle way, but going back to at the time, I remember there's a couple agents, the ones who would do the best were like not really following the script. They were having they're building rapport. They're doing all these interesting things that I wanted to try. And then, you know, of course the manager is like, no, like if you go off the script, like I'll, you know, kick your butt. Like you can't go off the script. But even that was like a lesson. Cause if I go back now, like I would take whatever the script is. And I think the scripts are important, right? We need templates, but it's like, gosh, I would have so much more like confidence to kind of take people a little bit off and bring them back, and then just be able to build rapport and, you know, kind of start with capturing their emotional states and their desires and just all the kind of important stuff that we do as copywriters. And, yeah, I would love to do it for like a day.
Yeah.
And then never do it again after that. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be kind of cool to see the difference. Like I even sold timeshare for a while and same thing, like the top guys were not doing what we were trained to do. They were doing their own thing that they had figured out and just killing it.
Sure.
And their presentations were like 45 minutes. Everybody else was like 3.5 hours and they were selling three times as much. Like it's just, but they were like, no, you got to stick to the script. Yeah. So yeah, it's, but they learned something, you know, about either the rapport or really getting quickly to the emotion of why they might want to do something like that, you know, all that stuff. So it is funny to look back at all the different jobs. So did you go straight after meeting your wife in the casino? How long did it take you to get into copy from learning about it?
So about 3 or 4 more months. So I took one last corporate job in like South Florida, because I wanted to, at the time especially, I'd gone to college in Florida too, and I just was like, I missed it there. And also, frankly, I wanted to leave San Diego because I've just been back there for this really brutal kind of, you know, experience. And I'm like, now that I was glad I did it, like I got the closure, saying goodbye to my dad, all of that. But I'm like, Right. Now, you know, I want to go somewhere different. So I took a job in South Florida. She came down for like a weekend. And then at the end of the weekend, I was like, I don't want you to leave. And she was like, I don't want to leave. So she basically just moved right in. This was Super Bowl Sunday of 2012, because we watched like the Giants win the Super Bowl. I remember we watched and her flight was supposed to leave after the Super Bowl. And so then I did the corporate job for a couple months. It was like an outside sales job, going to like basically gas stations and making sure they had like the right products. But I had like a car, they paid for my gas. Like I was getting like $40,000 a year, which in your, you know, early to mid 20s was like not bad actually, right? It was pretty, yeah. At the time I was really stoked, but I just was still like miserable. And basically she finally was like, you're unemployable, like stop. Cause I jumped around from so many other jobs before that. And I constantly was having entrepreneurial ideas. And, but then like, then I was thinking about how to start businesses, but I had no idea how to start a business. And finally, I just like clicked one day and I was like, do you think I could like make money writing copy like you do? You know, like I had no idea. And she was like, yeah, probably. So I put a thing on Warrior Forum and Warriors for Hire, and it was like, I'll write a sales letter for you for $149. And I just kind of copied. I saw some of her sales letters because she'd written some, you know, Warrior special offers of the day and stuff like that. And but I woke up with like $298 in my PayPal account. Like Brian Zimmerman, who's like one of the founders of JVZoo, hired me. And I think Wilco de Crazy, how do you say his name? Who's still, it's funny, the people who hired me, the first clients are still around doing stuff, which is kind of cool. Yeah. But yeah, they both had hired me. And then from there, I quit my job about a month after that, because I was like, oh, like people will actually pay me to write copy. I was like that was it. I'm like, oh, like I'm good. Because there's the belief, right? Until it happens, you just don't believe it really can happen. And it happens. And yeah.
Yeah. When you get that first paying client, it's like, whether it's, you know, copywriting or online marketing or anything else, is like, oh, this is legit after all. Like, and then when it happens twice, it's like, oh, what, game on, right?
Yeah.
Who was your mentor? I'm just curious. Who, where did you kind of learn the, did, I guess you, I'm sure you asked your wife a lot of questions along the way. And you said you kind of pulled some, you probably pulled some of her, her copy and stuff like that. But like any other people that are out there in the, you know, known copywriters or industry gurus, I hate to use that word. I hate that term guru.
I know. I mean, I hate that term and I hate the term personal brand. And yet I still use both sometimes. Just can't avoid it. Yeah. You know, my wife would have been my first for sure. And you know, I was so blessed and fortunate that like, I would write something and be like, is this good or not? And she could actually give me a pretty qualified opinion. And that helped quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got hired in 2013 ish, by Tryon Savia. I don't know if you guys know him, but he is, he had an offer called Backyard Liberty that was like a home aquaponics and like survival offer. And he had like a survival company that got up to, I don't know, 15, 20 million a year. So, Tryon and his brother, Alex and his brother's name, like they had hired me, and then they had a third partner who, this guy honestly is like super, secretive and like Romanian. So I don't even really want to say his name. I call him Yi, let's just call him that. But no, it sounds like so weird, but like, I like, anyway, they like Tryon and Yi, like they were the ones who started really giving me feedback. So like, I wrote like some home, like home self-defense or home defense, like a product called Bulletproof Home about how to like, you know, protect your home. Mm-hmm. And it was like decent. It actually did okay. But they're like, hey, like you need to study fascinations. And I'm like, I don't know what fascinations are. And they gave me the Screaming Eagle newsletter from, and you know, then they're like, go through and, you know, take this product and do like 20 fascination types. There's like, I think 21 different types in the newsletter. And they're like, do 20 for, you know, each fascination type for this product. And like, I did it. And then they actually started, and they're the ones who started really teaching me about, here's like the structure, like here's what a good lead has. Like they would show me like other, their own offers, but other people's offers, and have them dissected with like all their notes on what was happening. And that's what really helped me to start seeing all the commonalities that are there, right? Like a good sales letter, and especially like short copy, especially long form copy, like it really is kind of following the similar structure again and again. And there's the same elements appearing again and again, but really try on probably is the first one to really help me to understand that.
Yeah. That's, man, survival is huge right now. I get prepper survival's right. It's hot right now. Yeah, that's good stuff. Like I remember when I started with copy, at Stansberry, that was my first paid like real gig. Was writing for Stansberry financial stuff, and same thing. That was one of the first things they had us do, is kind of look at copy and start tearing it apart, annotating it on the sides, and you know, and so you could see, oh yeah, it is kind of the same basic stuff over and over and over.
Yeah, but
it's kind of interesting. You went to South Florida because that's kind of its own little copywriting mecca too. You know, between some of the financial publishers and AWAI and, you know, a lot of those other things. I was coming down there to, you know, AWAI boot camp about the time you were getting started, I guess. That's where I learned about copy. So let's go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you've got something I was reading on your website. It's kind of unique approach to direct response, but it's something you called the emotional response marketing. ERM. Is that something you've trademarked? Is that something that you've kind of developed on your own?
I did develop it on my own. It's not trademarked, and I really should probably go listen to this and do it. But yeah, it is something I kind of came up with. And after I came up with that, I did like a Google search. I think maybe it's been used once or twice by other people, but mm-hmm. like not very prevalently and not in the same context necessarily.
I don't see it very often. So I thought it's pretty... Definitely garners the attention. And so kind of share with us, what is the difference? What is kind of that unique takeaway from the ERM that's a little bit different than traditional direct response copy?
Yeah, this came about because I did a presentation for a woman named Shanda Sumter, who does a lot of stuff in like the kind of, I don't know, she's like female entrepreneurs to kind of grow their businesses and stuff like that. She's awesome. She's got her own like 8-figure kind of development, personal development company. And she was like, oh, come talk about like email. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, sure. Like she, we met at a mastermind before that. I'd written lots of email copy, run a list for one of my health offers, but I'm like, what am I going to talk about that really actually, you know, resonates with this woman's audience? Cause it's a bunch of women who are doing, you know, can be like, I don't know, like some of them are like psychics and stuff, and some of them are doing different interesting stuff. And I'm like, but as I thought about it, and I looked at the time, I didn't even have my email list. But I was partnered with Justin Goff and Copy Accelerator, and I was looking at his like open rates. And he had like a 1,000 people on his list at the time, but he had like these emails with like 80% open rates and all of this kind of stuff. And I was like, damn. And I'm like, well, you know, what's he doing? He's really just telling stories and building an authentic relationship and connection with his list and his audience. And then when he does sell, people buy, like they really buy. And then I was doing that in our Facebook group. We have a Justin and Stefan Talk Copy Facebook group, which now is like almost 6,000 people by the time had maybe 1,000. But I was doing the same thing to promote our first Copy Accelerator event. And then people were like, you know, buying tickets. And then at the event, they're like, they joined our mastermind, which was $22,000 at the time. And they literally come to me and be like, the reason I'm buying is because of your authenticity and vulnerability and the posts you put kind of sharing this stuff. And then since then I created my own, you know, I developed my own list. I've got, not huge, there's like 3,000 people on my list, but again, super valuable people on my list are, I think the average subscriber is worth like $500 a year. So do the math. It's like $1.5 million and pretty much like profit in the first year from this list. But I'm not looking at people as profit. That's the thing, right? I have the list, and all I'm trying to do is like share authentic emotional stories about myself, to be vulnerable, to be real, to be honest, to talk about what I've learned. And when I do that, for most of those emails, there's no call to action. And that's where this idea comes from, is like with direct response, right? We're trying to get them to take an external action, to click a button to go somewhere else, or to click the add to cart, or to pick up the phone and call, or reply, you know, send in a check, or whatever it is. But I was like, you know, if we're being emotional and vulnerable and all these things, and we're doing that, like, we're trying to elicit an internal, you know, response, an internal action. And then that's like for them to feel something. And, you know, if you can elicit those internal responses over time, when you do ask them to take like a direct response or an external response, like they're much more likely to do it. So that's like my thesis, at least. And it's something that I've been playing with. But I from, you know, anecdotally, for me and others I've seen who really take that approach, it seems to be, it's fun to do because you get to be super real, but it also, you know, it's pretty like lucrative as well to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I guess you're kind of taking a little bit of what, you know, Gary Vee might, you know, his jab, jab, was it jab, 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 or hook, hook, jab, or whichever. I don't know which is which, yeah. But it's like, you know, three pieces of content or gives, and then an ask, you know, is basically the book is all about.
Right.
But you're even taking it a step further. It's not necessarily content. It's more of like, sounds almost like more like insights, like something that a good coach would do. You know, and a lot of people think there's no value in that, like monetary value. But you know, the high end, really high end coaches will tell you, like, that's your job, is to help people get insights. Cause until they get the insight, they can't change the behavior to actually get different results.
Yeah, 100%. I think, the difference between like the Gary Vee thing is spot on. Like the one of the big differences too is that I guess I'll jab for like 3 months if I don't have anything to do, right? Like it's fine.
Sure.
I think the other part of it too is like really for people, I've been thinking about this and developing my own kind of paradigms and frameworks. And it's like, there's two things that people need to really be successful, and who's on my list. So it's, you know, freelancers who are mostly copywriters who are all over the place. Like you have some really successful ones, but a lot of them are just getting in. They're maybe making a couple $1,000 a month, and then they have a month where they make 8,000, but then they make 2,000 the next month, and there's the feast and famine stuff. You know, there are like the higher level writers and like, you know, Dan Ferrari's on my list and Justin and whatever. And then, you know, on the business side, it's kind of the same thing. Like you had Craig Clemens and Frank Kern and people like that are on my list, but then you have tons of people who are starting their first offer and like hoping that it, you know, is going to do okay. And so, you know, but I think for a lot of people that I connect with the most and who are really going to buy them, like people are going to buy more from me anyway, or people who are earlier on, and I actually enjoy working with those people more because it's more of an impact in their lives. So I think there's two sides. There's like belief and then there's tools, mm-hmm. right? So I need to like give them tools, which I have paid tools, but I'm like, let me just give them a bunch of really valuable free tools. But I also have to help with their beliefs, because if they don't believe that they can actually make money as a freelance copywriter or start an offer or, you know, grow a business, then the tools won't matter. They're never going to go to buy a tool if they don't believe that the tool will work for them. So I kind of try and focus on those two categories and let that dictate a lot of the content that I create and share with my lists.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And that's so true. Like, I call it mindsets and skill sets. So same kind of thing, right? Beliefs and tools. I just wanted it to rhyme. So, right. Good copy, right? You got to rhyme or alliterate or something, that's acronym, right. Something. It's so true. Like if people don't really see themselves being able to do the thing, they're not going to buy and invest in doing it. They may read about it, talk about it, but they won't actually get around to doing it and, you know, sometimes they'll buy stuff just for a while, but at some point the lack of belief will keep them from buying.
Yeah.
You know, cause they bought into kind of the, well, it's not your fault, which we love to say in copy, you know, but at the end of the day, they start feeling like, oh, maybe it is my fault. Maybe I'm not quite ready or I don't quite believe. And then they're going to stop buying.
Right.
And I think that's where something like what you do with a more authentic approach, then you show the struggles that you've had and that it's not necessarily easy and not everything you write is going to win. You know, that's huge. Like people need to know that.
Yeah. So, I was watching, several episodes earlier today. Cause my teenage son, he had a home study day. So we have to pick something that's like educational value. So I was like, let's watch Shark Tank. So we were like, we watched like 3 hours of Shark Tank today. This morning, like the latest episode. So we're watching, you know, we were like watching all these pitches, and he loves this stuff. He eats it up because he likes to see like them pick apart every idea. But one of the things you notice is kind of like this, this approach that you're talking about is some of the most powerful pitches on there, if you really pay attention, are the ones that have kind of that emotional appeal. And it's tied to whatever their product they're, you know, pitching to the sharks. A lot of time is tied to something that's very important to them, whether it's something personal, you know, a personal struggle, or something that they have seen and dealt with. And, you know, it really hooks them. You know, you can see that in the presentation to the sharks, or the pitches to the sharks, where it really, like, when, you know, and it's laid out perfectly. You've seen these pitches. They're laid out perfectly. Like, they hit them at the right time, and then the camera pans to the sharks, and it's like, you know, then it totally changes the ball game, the whole dynamic, where they're like, oh man, that's really powerful. So
that's actually a really cool point, because I haven't watched Shark Tank a lot recently, but I used to just watch it a ton. Yeah. I think about Robert Hershovic, like, mm-hmm. getting emotional and talking about, well, this reminds me of when I was starting out. Damon and John would always do that. Yeah. Barbara Corcoran, like, you're totally right, but I haven't really heard anyone. People don't focus on that part. They focus on the pitch and the product and the idea.
Yep.
The actual response that is being elicited by the sharks is huge. And you're right. Whenever they seem kind of teary-eyed, or they're really intently focused, so they almost always make an offer to invest, even when they don't think that the product is like that great, right? They're just, they believe in the person. So they're investing in the person. And
that's what I was going to say, is like, there's been several times I've been watching. They're like, I'm invested in you. Yep. Like, they've just come out and said it. They're like, I believe in you as an entrepreneur. I'm not sure this idea, but I'm going to take a bet on you.
Yep.
Because I know that you're going to do the work, and if we need to pivot, you will, and all that kind of stuff. And I think we can do the same thing with our lists and with our customers. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, especially in a personality-driven business, or one man, you know, where it's more of a freelance or something like that, people really are buying you first. Because they like you. And, you know, even in big business, if you really want to, people are always the problem. It's never the products or processes or procedure. It's always people, right? So if you can let people know that you're going to be there for them, like, that's over, I'd say that's 80% of the sales process, is like believing in the person behind the product. So yeah. It sounds like your system, I don't want to call it a system, because it's really not. It's more just you being the authentic, you know, mm-hmm. and sticking to that process of sharing those things. It's really helpful for people.
Yeah, 100%. One thing too, I've been thinking about this a lot during like COVID and lockdowns and with restaurants. But, you know, if I were a restaurant owner and I could only do delivery, you know, I mean, have you ever like been to a restaurant where they actually email you every day? Like, definitely, I've never been to one. Even if they get your email, it's like once every month you get a newsletter, or you get some random coupon. It's like a crappy HTML coupon. And like, you know, like, you're like Google thinks it's spam, or Gmail thinks it's spam. But I'm like, imagine, you know, if like the restaurant owner was like sending you emails talking about like, hey, here's why I started this restaurant, you know, or like, here's why I became a chef. Like, and here's like, you know, the worst dish I ever made, you know, meet so-and-so from our kitchen. Like, you know, if they were sending emails like that regularly, and then being like, oh, and by the way, of course, we're open for, you know, tough times for everyone. We're open for takeout, delivery. If you want to place an order, just click here. You know, I just think that they could be doing that. They're the level of orders they would get and their business would pick up like markedly, because again, then people are not buying. It's like the food's great. Sure. Hopefully. But like, they're because of the people. They know, they feel connected to like the, you know, the owner or the chef or that. So I just think you know, from a personality driven, like a personal brand or freelancing stuff, like it works there. But I even think for a lot of like doctor's offices could be doing that, with the doctors telling, oh, the most difficult, you know, patient I ever saw, or like most difficult case. I just think a lot more people could be doing that emotional storytelling to create authentic relationships with their communities, and that it would probably really impact their businesses in a positive way as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's funny you say that. When COVID hit, there was like, we had a favorite little restaurant nearby that my wife always went to. She's actually listens to the show, so maybe she's listening. But when it started, she was like, She knew I was in marketing and she kind of called. She was in a little bit of a panic. First thing I said was like, calm down. It'll be all right. that was the coach part of me. Yep. Then I was like, yeah, I've got some lights. If you've got a video camera, like just start. People are locked in their house. They don't know what to do. She wasn't quite set up for this was the first like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, in March. So nobody was really set up for delivery like they are now. Like, right. People have evolved into that. I said, yeah, just, you know, shoot some videos, show people some of your recipes and like actually show them how to cook what you serve in the restaurant. Cause they're going to miss it. They want it. Yeah. And when you can deliver, like, to order, cause they don't want to bother with cooking it. Like, a few people will, they want to try it, but most people just want the food on their table. Right. Especially with the stress and the kids being home. And sure enough, she came and got the lights and started doing some videos and things like that on, you know, Facebook, YouTube. And, then Kate started coming up with new ideas for like, you know, Easter dinners pre-prepared and like all this stuff. And now they've survived because they reached out to their audience. They kind of met them where they were during this whole situation and boom, you know, it kept them afloat and kept them selling orders. It was awesome. I mean, it's pretty cool to watch. I mean, people just want to be communicated with like they're two people, like we're having a conversation now, you know, it doesn't have to be so formal, I think.
Totally. That's awesome. That's really cool. And good for her for doing it. 'Cause I think that the challenge we run into, right, is you give that great idea and then a lot of people don't actually take action on it. So good to hear that she did take action
as well. It was cool. So I want to switch gears a little bit. You've got a weekly show that you do on your website. And the name is, I mean, the name's pretty, pretty big promise, right? So it's the Road to a Billion Weekly Show. There's some implied stuff in there, but like, where'd that name come from and what's that about? And I'm guessing it's something to do with the sales, but I want to hear from you. Like, what is this Road to a Billion show about?
Yeah. So the name, you know, there's basically two purposes or two meanings or reasons for the name. One is that, yeah, like I should probably hit like $1 billion in sales either end of this year or early next year. Again, because of the clients, like you've got guys like the Shred and Sculpt Nation who are doing like $250 million a year. And like I've wrote a bunch of their copy and you've got other people. And so like my copy is good, of course, but you know, like I always want to be like aware of that. Right. But as a marketer, I'm like, once I started realizing putting together some of these numbers and stuff, and I'm like, I should probably use that to like market myself because why would I not? Right. I'm like, so, you know, part of it is that, and then part of it is, I really want to make a direct impact on the lives of like 1 billion people over the next 10 years. And whether that is like emotional, mental, spiritual, physical, through relationships, whatever it is. And you know, I'm still working on how to impact it. I mean, it can be as simple as like mindset and helping people to shift their mindset and their beliefs about what's possible in their lives. But so those are kind of the reasons for the name. And the reason the show came about is because as I'm being more intentional with putting myself out there and growing my email list and getting PR and going on an amazing podcast like your guys' podcast. And over time, I'm like, you know, what was already happening is like even at 3,000 people on my list in the Facebook group of like 6,000 people, you know, I start to get like messages and emails that I just can't reply to because I'm still actively writing copy. I'm running businesses. I'm doing my mastermind. Like, and that was always really important to me. Even when I started Copy Accelerator with Justin, it was like, I want to keep writing copy for clients because I don't be that guy who's like, this worked 5 years ago. And people are like, what's working now? I'm like, well, I don't know. You know, like, I really want to keep like doing that and be a really intentional decision. But I'm like, damn, I told my wife one night, I was like, it's kind of frustrating. I don't know. I really want to respond to everybody. And as I get, you know, more and more reach, it's going to be harder and harder to do that. And we talked about it and I honestly can't, I want to just give her the credit. I don't know if she came up with this idea or not, but I think she was like, oh, yeah, I think it was her. And she was like, oh, it'd be kind of cool if it was almost like you could just do like a call-in radio show. And then I was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. So I was like, why don't I do that? And I was like, I can just create like a podcast and, you know, I'll do like a weekly Zoom kind of on Zoom webinar and people can call in and listen and then they can ask questions and we'll actually call them out and be like, hey, you know, we've got a question from whoever. They want to know about this. And then they can ask your question like live and get it answered by, originally it was going to be just by me. But after you do that like 10 or 15 times, you're kind of like, it's kind of boring if it's just me all the time. So, yeah, right. Then it evolved to bringing on different guests as well. And which is actually so fun for me. It's more fun, right? Because if I just talk the whole time, it's like, I think I have great things to share and hard-earned wisdom and stuff like that. But when I get to have people who have different experiences and backgrounds and superpowers and hear how they would solve problems or how they would address challenges, it's, I think, just super valuable for everybody. And it's something where I learn every show I do. So I'm really enjoying doing it.
So what are the, what are some of the top questions? Because you tend to get the same questions over and over, right? So what are some of the top questions you get on that show?
And yeah, how do you answer them? It's gotten a little better because I'm having guests from different like verticals. So that gives a little variety, but there's definitely like from the really basic beginner questions of like, how do I get clients? Like I'm new to copywriting. How do I get clients? And like, you know, that's just the perennial question. Like you have my copywriting course and people like are like, hey, I want to buy it, but does it show me how to get clients? Right. Like it makes sense, right? Everyone wants to get clients and it makes sense. So that's a good perennial question. What else is it? And then lots about mindset, honestly, which is cool. Mindset is something I really love talking about, but a lot of people, you know, have these imposter syndrome issues or limiting beliefs about what's possible for them, or they find that they're self-sabotaging themselves a lot. And so, people ask about that almost every single show. Like, how can I get out of my own head? How can I stop self-sabotaging myself? How can I stop having limiting beliefs? And, I don't know. I feel like we've talked about it a lot of times on the show, but you know, it's never going away. I guess it's always gonna be a challenge that people deal with. Yeah,
I think those two things are, you know, evergreen principle or questions, right? They're, how do I get clients in any business? You know, that's why we get, you know, paid to write copy and, you know, get paid to, you know, Jonathan does industrial sales and he gets paid by, you know, his manufacturers to go find more business, right? That's never going away. And then I think you're right. I think mindset, you know, people feeling a little bit lost, a little bit uncertain, that's just never going away either. So, I mean, those are two good problems to know how to solve because they're never going away. Well, so I'm curious, what do you say to people about getting clients? Like, do you have kind of a go-to response or?
Yeah, I think it depends on what they're doing a little bit, obviously, but for like freelancers, really it's to do something, to send them something that you did for free. So I'll like, for example, you know, we use copywriting since I'm a copywriter, right? Where we've got copy background here. But like, I just, you know, if you find like a list of like 10 companies or clients you would love to work for, you know, and it's not, people are like, well, how do I find them? It's like, go on LinkedIn, go into Facebook groups, like talk to other people. Like there's, you know, it's not that hard to find out who owns these different companies, or the people are just out there and they're their own brand. So find a list. And then, you know, figuring out what you're good at, like, reach out to them and give them like a piece of copy. So whether it's an email creative you wrote for them or some new headlines to test or a new lead, something like that. And then just be like, hey, I'm, you know, Stefan, I'm brand new, or I'm pretty new in copywriting, but I've been studying every day. And, I love your, actually, honestly, I don't know if I even say that I'm new. I'm like, hey, I'm Stefan and I'm a copywriter. I love your stuff. And like, I noticed that you've been running the same headline for a long time and it's like, amazing, but I really love writing headlines and I decided to give you a couple other ones that you could test on your page. These are just yours, no obligation. Like, try them out if you have a chance. And if you do, I'd love to hear how they work out. And if they do work out well, then, you know, I'd love to talk about how we can work together in the future. And like just doing that type of thing, or like, you know, hey, here's three email creatives, cause I still saw that you're promoting this a bunch. And you know, if they didn't work out, would love to write more emails. I'm an email copywriter. The thing is you can do that for any, like you could be a designer and be like, hey, I went ahead and designed a new logo. If you like it, let me know. If you do, if you're a voiceover artist, you could do it. If you're like, I talked to a guy who does like music production stuff for TV commercials. I'm like reach out to producers and be like, hey, I created like a, you know, like a 30-second thing for your commercials. Like if you like it, use it. Because I think like what you find is with people who are kind of get up to a certain level, people are hitting up all the time. They're, some of them are just saying like, hey, please hire me. Right. And they're like, okay, like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that. Some of them are like, hey, I'll work for you for free. But even the work for you for free thing is like a total drain. Cause I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know. Are you any good? Are you right, gonna be a weirdo? Like, are you, am I gonna have to spend time copy chiefing and copy editing or tweaking your work and giving you feedback? Like, you know,
cause that may not cost them any money, but it costs them a lot of time to work for somebody that they're not so sure about that's advertising for free. You know, you're kind of like, whoa, well, that's a, it may not be a gamble in money, but it's a gamble in time, which for a lot of people is more valuable than money these days.
100%. Yeah. I mean, not to like, coming from a very fortunate place in my life, and I am, it's like, I'd way rather give away $1,000 or $2,000 than I would give away a few hours of my time, especially on like a busy day. You know what I mean? Like 10 out of 10 times, I'll give you the money before I give you my time. Mm-hmm. And so, but if you deliver the copy, and again, you have to actually be practicing your craft and be like good at what you're doing. Right. But if you are, then it removes this huge, like kind of objection that the prospective client has, which is, well, is this going to be any good? Or are they going to be, you know, how is like working with them? Like how long will it take for me to get it? If you just get copy right away. And what will happen is, and I had like a media, like I think it was from CNBC or someplace that I got like an article, cause I have like PR people helping me with that. And, they're like, oh, can we show proof that the strategy's worked? And I posted in like a Facebook group, and I have like this whole list of people who everything from just like little things, like a couple, you know, $50 an hour or like a couple $100 to write some emails, to people who've gotten 6-figure like retainers now from that strategy. Cause it's not, you know, it may work 1 out of 10 times or 1 out of 20 times. But like the day is like, you're trying to get clients, you gotta hustle for it, and it will work. And there's also the whole principle of reciprocity, right? I just gave you something. Now you feel like you have to give something back. And then, and then feeling like the other part of it too is you gotta follow up. Like you can't be afraid to follow up multiple times with people, because the same people who value their time over money, are also the same people who don't have a lot of time to reply to your email. So they might see it and think like, oh man, I really need to get back. That's so cool. They did this. I need to get back to them. But then 10,000 other things, like a fire happens over here, and you know, then their kids got like a flu or the flu, and like, you know, like life gets in the way. So you've got to follow up multiple times and not be afraid of bothering them. Like, I don't know about you guys. Like personally, someone has to really harass me for me to feel like annoyed that they're following up. Someone can sell me, like actually one guy did it. He bought one of my like a freelancing course I created, and then he followed up with me and the other guy who created it, like I think sent 18 emails in 18 days, but they were funny with like good subject lines and they're engaging. And finally we were like, dude, sorry. Like, but before I even, so I ended up hiring the guy to write a sales letter. Right. And he actually was at my house last night. he came in, we're in Vegas right now, and he's in Scottsdale. He drove over and they came over and we hung out and spent a couple hours together. But, if he hadn't kept, even early on after the 5th or 6th email, in my head, I was like, oh man, I really need to respond to this guy. Right. I was feeling like bad about it. Like, and so you got to follow up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Like I have a 3-email or 3-contact series that I use. And one of the things I do is in the 3rd email or the 3rd contact, if it's a message or whatever, I'll say, hey, I don't want to be a pest. And you know, if you're not interested in the things I see, don't say it exactly like that, but basically I use the word pest because it's really kind of polarizing. And without fail, it's almost like the 9-word email. Mm. Like people always respond to that one. They're like, no, 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 I've just been busy. Appreciate it. Yeah. And it works really, really well.
Yeah.
So like throw that one in your sequence somewhere, cause it just like, it definitely works. And I agree. Like if somebody will show me that they're trying to get better at their craft, and then I see some work that they're doing and it's pretty good or even kind of good, like, I'm okay. Well, this person's got the guts to reach out. They gave me something and it's pretty good. And they're still practicing, trying to get better. There's not many of those people on the planet, really. Yeah. So I want to stay in touch with that person.
Yeah.
And that's really all that's all it really takes to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's funny because I've taught this strategy for like a year now, and occasionally somebody does it, but I still can't tell you how many times people, then they email me 2 times or 3 times and then they just give up. Yeah. And it's like, and in my head after that, again, usually by the first, I'll see the first one, but I might not read it right away. Right. Second one, I'm like, oh yeah. And I'll go back and read the first one. And I'm like, I should respond. By the third one, I'm like, man, I really need, and it may still take like 5 or 10 more emails, but like, I'm literally thinking about that. I'll be in the shower thinking about that person and feeling bad about not responding. Right. Yeah. I don't care if they're in like Nigeria or like India, like, right. It doesn't matter. Like this, if they had a cool email and good copy. But so many people after 3 are like, and I guess he's not interested. And you're just like, but I love the pest thing. I haven't heard that before. That makes total sense. Cause this is kind of polarizing. And then
it is.
Like, no, you're not, it's my fault. It's not your fault. You know,
Sean, when you're using that, it almost feels like your final appeal to them. Cause you're like, okay. Cause if I say, I don't want to be a pest, you're probably not going to email again. It kind of reminds me, you know, one of the approaches I love is Chris Voss, who he wrote the book Never Split the Difference on negotiation. And he talks about an email where people don't respond to you. And you're just like, subject line, are you finished with this? Have you given up on this project or something like this? Basically, it's very...
I think it was, have you given up on this project?
Yeah, have you given up on this project? So it basically forces them to admit. Mm-hmm. And it's a little, it's kind of similar, but it's, I think it's a little more direct and say, listen, you know, it's either you respond now or that's it. And I've used that approach in my marketing, and I've found that it is very effective for people who, for the most part, have like been putting things off and and are like, oh, wait. I don't want you to go away. I just like, it's not been the biggest priority, but now I'm going to make it because I know I see your time's valuable. So
it's kind of like a cart closing type email, right? Yep. It's like last chance.
Yep, exactly.
And that's when half the sales come in, right? So it's the same basic thing triggering in the brain. It's like, oh, this guy may go away.
That's right.
I do like what he's doing or she, mm-hmm. and I better reach out because, yep. you know, not because they're giving up, but because they're moving on, that's which right. is actually also, that's kind of the velvet rope or the, mm-hmm. yeah, the velvet rope. Cause you're like, oh, they're moving on. They don't need me.
That's right.
Now I really want to talk to them. So
your value's gone.
Yeah. I just want to give a quick shout out to, the Brushfire Mind. He's, one of our past guests. He just dropped a comment over in the comment section. So good to see you watching again. Appreciate it. Been looking at your show too. So good stuff. All right. Well, we're getting close to an hour here. So
yeah, this has been great. So, Stephan, we've enjoyed having you. I do want to ask Sean, you may have something, but before I forget, mm-hmm. I can't let this pass without asking you, you're a minority owner in a sports agency with players in the NFL and MLB. So can you share a little bit about that? Cause that really piques my curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's like more because of the luck of like a childhood, like best friend. Yeah. So basically one of my best friends from childhood, he actually lives in the same neighborhood as where I'm in Vegas now. But, he is a sports agent and he was in, he had a company called Empire Athletes and, they were, it was him and a friend from college. And basically their whole strategy was trying to get guys who were, like coming out of like, you know, college football, who like weren't going to get drafted, but who were talented enough to get invited to like, you know, training camp and then like, you know, get a spot in training camp. And then eventually so the practice squad is right. Stuff like that. And then some of those guys were going to like end up making a team eventually. And every now and then one of them might actually even like end up have significant playing time. So, you know, the first several years they didn't really have anybody notable. Then they actually had, they signed Michael Sam, who I don't know if you remember that guy. He was like the first open league player. Yeah. So I was actually I was with Michael Sam when he got drafted. I was at like the house with my friend. And if you look at on ESPN and stuff, like you actually see me there floor. We're like, oh yeah. But like the first time
I mean, Missouri, right? He came from Missouri.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, he was SEC defensive mm-hmm. player of the year.
Yep.
And ended up, you know, not having working out in the NFL for a variety of reasons. But anyway, mm-hmm. he ended up splitting up his partner, started a new sports agency called Dynamic Sports Group. And previously, this guy is like a workhorse. He has had equity in some of my other companies and advised me, and he's a friend. So he basically was like, hey, you know, you always are getting me involved in your company. So I want to put you in my company and give you 5%. And, but it wasn't like just a gift. He's like, I want your counsel and your opinion. So he basically gave me 5% to just be, you know, there to like advise. And, as far as like who we have, so it was still like the same like strategy for a while. As far as like getting guys who are kind of like those fringe dudes who might get drafted in like the, you know, seventh round of like for the NFL, it's mostly football and baseball. So you might get drafted in the seventh round, or if not, they're going to be a priority free agent. Then they're getting invited to like, you know, practice squad. And, you know, and over time it just started working. And so, I mean, like Austin Eckler is probably our biggest client. You know, he's with the LA Chargers and he's like their main running back. We had, you know, Mosley, who was a quarterback for the 49ers. He actually left us after last year, but he had a bad Super Bowl anyway. Yeah. So I'm not surprised. But
most of those guys are all working for that second contract. You know, that's where the big payday is.
Exactly. Yeah. So Eckler got it. So Eckler got signed for it. It was like 4 or 5 years for $26 million. And you can tell I'm not like, I'm clearly not super locked into it because I don't remember the exact numbers. We have Boston Scott, who's with the Eagles, and then a couple guys in the MLB as well. So, my end is mostly just there to provide some advice and counsel and, you know, occasionally to go have dinner with like a pro athlete and stuff. So it's pretty awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's cool. It's amazing what, you know, I know he's a childhood friend, but at the same time, because of what you learn in this business, like you really can give a lot of counsel to a lot of different types of businesses, and it opens doors like crazy.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you guys have had the same thing. I've had people, I get offered equity pretty like regularly and stuff. And I usually don't take it because a lot comes along with the equity and it's a lot of your time and stuff like that. But it is neat, right? Once you're one of the best in the world at what you do, people want to just give you parts of their company so you can help their company to get better. And it's a pretty cool place to be.
It is indeed. Well, man, we could probably talk shop for a long time between the three of us. But so, Stephen, where can people find you? You know, feel free to offer anything you want to throw out there as far as where they can find you, what you're up to, anything like that.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. I think that really my big thing is like people should get on my email list. So it's just StephanPaulGeorgi.com/subscribe. When you go there, there's an application, which I just completely swiped from Justin Goff because I saw how good his open rate for. I'm just copying this pretty much verbatim and did. But you know, for the application, like I'm not like, it's not like an elitist thing. Like, I don't care like who you are, where you're from, anything like that. It's a screening mechanism because if people just put like, you know, JFKSSS, or they put like, you know, what are you interested in? Like copy, like, what are you like trying to sell stuff? It's like, I don't know, like, well, why do I want the person? Right. And I'm really on, like, going back to the emotional response stuff. I'm like, I'll talk about like really like honest personal stuff. Like whether it's like victories of clients, but also like struggles or like stuff about like income, and not in like a douchey way, but like I'll just be really transparent. So I feel like I need to know who's on my list and who I'm talking to. But that's the best way. And then from there, you know, I'll link to when I put stuff on, like, you know, YouTube, like Road to a Billion, like that's how you can go register to be on the show. When I have like articles published and I'm just writing really good, like actionable content around belief or providing tools pretty much every day.
Cool. All right. Well, that sounds good. And like I said, we've enjoyed it. And I know we could talk forever. We've got a lot of, like I said, friends in common. But we're going to throw you back in the green room for just a minute. We're going to finish up, and then I want to talk to you about a couple quick things before you go, if you can wait 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Stephen, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Good stuff, man.
That was awesome. I feel like he would have fit right in at down at the casual pint with us and just talking on a Friday afternoon like we're doing now. But absolutely. I guess this is the COVID version, right?
That's right. Any closing thoughts here before we sign out?
Well, it sounds like if you want to make people rich, you know, just learn copy from Stephen and Justin too, I guess.
Yep.
But yeah, from Stephen and get into his stuff. He's got some cool courses. He was being a little modest with just his email list, but if you go to his site, there's some other tools there that can get you started if you're already kind of on this journey that I think can accelerate what you're up to. So check those out because
he's got some good stuff. Really good blogs too. You could really gain a lot just by reading some of his blogs. Like he's got some really good titles, really intriguing. And his layout is really, if you visit his website, it's done really well. But visit his, make sure you click on his blog, read some of his content, man. It is killer. So
yeah, it's good stuff and good use of emojis too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. His graphics are out there. Love his use of graphics, especially on the blog. He's got some killer.
It looks like you see like a YouTuber type graphics for their thumbnails. Exactly. Good stuff, catchy stuff. So, all right, we'll wrap this up. We'll be doing. I think we're doing a random flight on the next show, right?
Exactly. Randomness. All right, guys. Well, you can find us, as always, at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. We're everywhere. So
everywhere.
Just look us up, Persuasion by the Pint, and subscribe to the show, and leave us 5 stars once you do, of course, because you're going to love all of our content each and every week. Sean, it's been fun, man. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
See ya.